What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd, my co-host who covers the team for The Athletic as well. He's Thomas Drantz. We are back after a long weekend. Apologies to everyone. We had Monday off. It was great. The Canucks haven't played since Friday either, though, so I don't feel that bad about having the long weekend for Thanksgiving weekend. But we're back today. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. It's a game day for the Canucks. We've got a couple of guests today. We got a lot to get into, but how was your Thanksgiving weekend, Drantz?
Oh, man. Awesome. Was up with the family in Pemberton. You know, some beers by the lake, some
lovely,
some cold dips in the lake. Lots of good times, lots of eats, lots of good wine.
Lots of food.
It was great.
Fantastic.
Fabulous. How was yours?
Yeah, it was great. I do. I double up. So I did full turkey Thanksgiving dinner on Saturday.
Yeah.
And then full turkey Thanksgiving dinner on Sunday with different sides of the family. So
damn,
a lot of turkey. I had like a food hangover yesterday, I would say.
Yeah,
not
yeah.
even an alcohol hangover. Just like I've eaten so much rich and heavy food over this weekend.
Well, so my in-laws are in town and we're going to go out for dinner tonight, like just to cap off a weekend of eating.
Perfect.
But, you know, made a reservation at a place like yesterday that's like tough to get reservations at. But
everyone's like, I can't think of it. I just want to have a salad. That's it.
If you want to go try that restaurant that you can't usually get into, tonight is your night, baby.
That's a good
no
point.
Wants to go out on the Tuesday after Thanksgiving. By the way, if you haven't been to Pemberton.
I have never been to Pemberton.
Strong recommend.
I would love to go sometime.
Yeah,
what are you looking at me like that
make
for?
Sure to get up there.
You've never been to Pemberton?
I've never been to Pemby.
Well, lots of people stop in Whistler unless they're going to some music festival. Like, when you've been to Pemberton, Dom, have you
yeah,
been
aside? So
that time you went to see Coldplay?
I was going to say, why have you been to Pemberton so often?
I just went to Pemberton because it was close to Whistler. It was close to the camping site I was at.
Okay.
Sure.
Fair enough.
Love to go. I don't have anything against it.
It's super fun. Go up, get up there. Lots of great little breweries and fun things to do.
There's a delightful coffee shop in Pemberton.
Blackbird Cafe. Let's go.
All right. There you go. Tom's travel advice. Get to Pemberton.
My strongest recommendation.
Wow. Strongest
go play
recommendation.
Big Sky.
I think it's one of the most charming places in the province.
I would love to go sometime. Love a good staying in BC getaway.
Yeah, me too.
We're blessed with a beautiful province.
We are very, very lucky. Yeah.
Anyways, as mentioned, it's a Canucks game day. Eric Erlandson, who covers the Tampa Bay Lightning, he's going to join us at 12:30. Yannick Hansen, I love when this happens because the Canucks are playing at 4, so the 6:50 schedule gets squeezed a little bit, which means we get Yannick Hansen today on at 1 o'clock. That's exciting. Before we do any of that, let's go right into the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, October 15th, and the headlines, Drantz. The Canucks still looking for that elusive, so far, first win of the season. They're on the road. First road trip of the year to play the Tampa Bay Lightning. They are, of course, 0-2 through their first two games after losing to Philly in the shootout on Friday night. So, chance to pick up win one of the season here. Tampa's, I believe, only played one game. We'll get into some lineup notes and some interesting changes that the Canucks might make in this game against the Lightning in a second here. But just broadly speaking, I mean, how are you looking at the Canucks' 0-2 start at the beginning of this campaign?
Look, it's two games, right? I mean, the Avs are what, 0-3?
Yeah, we'll get to all that, too. The Western Conference picture is fascinating now.
The Edmonton Oilers haven't won a game. The Flames are undefeated. I mean, this is what happens. Like, this is how it works. You know, if you lose, like, two games is not enough for a streak either way.
No.
Right?
No, yeah, it's true. If you win two games in the middle of the season, no one's like, they're red hot right now.
If two games is a half week's worth of games most weeks in the NHL, right? Like, it's nothing. It's minuscule. Two games often doesn't define a single week of a team season, much less a month of the team season, much less the entire team season. And yet, we're so conditioned to overweighting what we see as an initial first impression,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, that's first impressions are influential. The Canucks have come out and made a flat-ish first impression, I think it's fair to say, right? There have been moments where they've looked, especially the forward group, has looked like dynamic and fast and exciting. There have been moments, certainly, where the defense has looked like they might struggle to key the rush when Quinn Hughes and Filip Hronek aren't on the ice together. The goaltending, well, we've had one iffy outing, one solid outing, mm-hmm. right? But certainly it lacks that aura of impenetrability that Thatcher Demko naturally brings with his very presence in the Canucks crease. Does any of that matter? Will any of that continue? Maybe. Like, some of that might be stuff that matters as we go through the season. Like, the Canucks have struggled to hold leads relative to what we saw last year, even though I sort of made fun of it all through last season and then in the playoffs. Of course, it happened twice. You know, you think about that Bruce Boudreaux first game of the year against the Oilers, where they take the 3-0 lead and then yep. fritter it away. And then that kept happening. You know what I mean? Or you think about last season, the Canucks win those first two games against the Oilers, and it's like, oh, baby! And then they come out and play two of their worst games of the season, and even that third game in Florida wasn't very good. It was like game six where we began to see what this Canucks team would be for the rest of the year. Like, if you were to react to those two games against the Oilers and be like, the Canucks are a contender, and then 30 games in, you were like, I was right. It's like, no, not really. Not really. Like, they won hanging on by the skin of their teeth against the Oilers in that second game. That was nothing like how the Canucks looked, even by the time they made the playoffs and were playing the Oilers.
Completely different.
It wasn't a possum game, even if the Oilers had the control or, like, the balance of play. So, anyway, I think the fact is that it's two games. It's, you know, a fart in the wind, a moth. What? Why did that get such a big reaction to you? From you.
Dom's just feeling very expressive today.
Yeah, it's a flutter of a moth's wings in a hurricane. Like, it's nothing. It's a drop in the bucket. And so, you know, I see some things I like. I see some things that, like, confirm my priors of things I was, like, small c concerned about coming into the season. And I'm just trying not to overreact to them because I have no idea what will persist or not. We're not even close to a significant enough sample for us to say much of anything, you know, one way or the other about this team.
Well, those are always the things that get the most attention in the small sample size to start the season, right? Is the things that were talking points coming into the year.
Totally.
Because you're like, I was already worried about the goaltending, hypothetically, and Shelov's didn't look great in his first start. See, it's going to be a problem all year, just like I was worried. But there's no actual connection, right? Like, I mean, sometimes with the blue line, would anyone be surprised if blue line mobility and puck moving is an issue all season long? No, of course not. But it's not because of what we've seen in these two games. Totally. You know what I mean? Like, these two games shouldn't meaningfully change how we think about that issue. It could just easily be an issue for this team all season. And, you know, the way I often think about it after, you know, the first game, two games, three games, whatever, is if they had these two results middle of the week in January, what would the reaction be? And the reaction would be like, that's too bad. They lost a couple points. Okay, that's it.
Or Canucks continue 10-game point streak.
That's true.
But their form seems to be slipping a bit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, there's so many different narratives you can attach to it. If it's, let me give you an example, okay? Quinn Hughes has one shot on goal through two games.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Last season, he had 200 shots. That's 2.5 per game, more or less. Well, 2.43, whatever. Who's counting? And, well, me. Anyway, the, you know, There could easily be a temptation, right, to react to that by saying something like, Quinn Hughes needs to find more opportunities to get shots on goal and he needs to do a better job getting pucks through, okay? But last season, there were six separate two-game stretches where he had one shot on goal, right? It's like things vacillate so wildly in terms of variable results in a highly variable sport. I fundamentally, too, when a team is quote-unquote struggling, Canucks are 500-point percentage, not whatever, it's two games. Anyway, when a team is quote-unquote struggling, and one of the primary reasons for it is something that I strongly believe to be untrue, like, the Canucks' best players have yet to be the, underline the word the, emphasize it, whatever, italics, reason that the Canucks have won a game, right? And so you get, you know, the 3-on-3 overtime against the Calgary Flames where the Canucks kind of spend the whole time in their own end and, you know, Elias Pettersson struggles to contain Zary and then Zary walks Hronek and on and on. And then you get the game against Philadelphia and it's like Pettersson forces a turnover. In alone, 30 seconds to go, has the goalie beat, misses just wide, right? And then again, has the goalie beat, misses just wide in the shootout. Like, that's two opportunities, you know, an inch off of calibration. And the whole narrative around Pettersson and the whole narrative about this team's start completely flips off of, what, five combined centimeters, something like that. So it's just like, margins are so fine all year long. Just because the Canucks have sort of had a couple weighted coin flips go against them to open the season with very little damage done. Like, you can't read into it, because these sorts of swings are what the season's all about. There's so much time left. It's just, it's almost less than meaningless to me that the Canucks haven't gotten the results that we're sort of looking for. I think more than anything, it's just like this team's like vibe check meter, right? Like, in some ways they're not quite hitting that. You know, like it feels like the top six is still building rapport,
very much,
right?
So
Garland and Hoglander aside, right, it's just felt like they're trying to put ketchup onto their, you know, plate of french fries, but it's one of those old glass bottles and they're like hitting the bottom of the jar. They haven't quite figured out the knife trick. Yeah, or the side hit.
Yeah,
you know, they're just fiddling with it, and it's just like, oh boy, looks a little constipated over there. And then, you know, similar things on defense and in goal. It's like they just haven't quite clicked yet.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not to say that I've seen signs suggesting that they won't, right? And I guess the other thing would be my confidence in this group of best players. Like, my confidence that more nights than not, Pettersson, Miller, Hughes, Besser, Hronek are going to find ways to win games. Demko when he's back, hopefully, right? More nights than not, that I don't know that confidence is shared by the fan base in as uncomplicated a way as I believe it, in part because I you know, Pettersson's lacked juice for like 40 games now, and I think there's like a building sense of frustration and skepticism about that, but it's still something that I'm pretty convinced is going to shape this season for Vancouver.
Yeah, and I mean, that's like, as much as we talk about, you know, hey, they're trying to find chemistry in the top six, and what's the blue line going to look like? Do they have enough mobility back there? If the top end isn't winning games on a consistent basis for this team, then none of those other conversations matter, right? Like, that is the theory of how this team is going to be a top of the Western Conference team and a Stanley Cup contender. All right, I want to get to the lineup notes today, yep, because there's some interesting things to dig into as they get set to play Tampa Bay coming up in less than 4 hours here. So, I didn't see any lines tweeted from the morning skate today, but based on how they lined up at practice yesterday, and this was Sportsnet's Dan Murphy tweeting it out, Arshdeep Bains getting a really interesting opportunity. He was skating with JT Miller and Brock Besser on the top line. Danton Heinen moves down to play with Elias Pettersson and Jake DeBrusk. Hoglander, Ratu, Garland still together. Sherwood, Bluger, Suter still together. And then Daniel Sprong skating as an extra forward. So it looks like he could come out of the lineup tonight in favor of Arshdeep Bains. Just a couple of other quick notes, and then we can dig into some of these. Shelovs gets the start in net. Of course, he didn't have a great performance game one against Calgary. Calgary, Lankinen looked pretty solid on Friday against Philly, and Rick Tocchet saying that Tyler Myers, despite leaving early in that Philadelphia game with what looked like it could turn out to be a gnarly injury, Myers an option per Tocchet. He's been skating with the team. So that's an interesting tidbit as well. But let's talk about Arshdeep Bains, right? Because I think that's the headline in terms of the lineup changes tonight going into Tampa Bay. Gets a big opportunity, not just getting into the game in game three of the season, right? After coming so close to breaking training camp with the team and ultimately being sent down to Abbotsford. And it's interesting to look back and kind of listen to what Rick Tocchet had to say around that decision, right? Stressing and emphasizing, hey, he came on really strong towards the end of preseason. He's still in the mix. And I mean, true to his word, we're just three games in now, and Arshdeep Bains is going to get that opportunity, not just getting in the game so early, but getting a chance on the top line with JT Miller and Brock Besser. And I mean, that is a really, really special opportunity for a still very young player with limited NHL experience in Arshdeep Bains.
Yeah. So, you know, when I thought about what Arshdeep Bains's 8-game cup of coffee looked like last season, in my mind, he was like always on that Lindholm line that was sort of like an audition, some youngsters for in case we need them in the playoffs line, right?
Yep.
Like we saw Podkolzin, we saw a variety of Canucks sort of unproven players cycle through there. But when I actually checked, like, he played 25 minutes with JT Miller. That's basically as much time as he spent with Elias Lindholm. So, you know, he comes in last year. He's playing this absolute straight up coach's pet hockey, right? Just like so disciplined on starts and stops and starts in the defensive zone, super high defensive motor, and then absolutely zero chances taken with the puck.
Yep.
And he was rewarded for that and bumped up the lineup as sort of a couple of injuries mounted for the Canucks during that 8-game stretch. And yet he played unlike Archdeep Baines plays, right? Like Archdeep Baines for me is not really a fourth line energy checking type player, although, you know, his defensive motor
can
make him look like that or make him effective in that role if need be. But I, that's not how he's going to hit, in my opinion. Like, if he's going to be a thing, and I, you know, I'm agnostic here. This is not saying he is or isn't. Just stylistically, if he's going to hit, I see it as more like an Amadio, you know, like low-end Riley Smith-type connective player, right? Archdeep Baines is separating skill, if he's going to be a full-time NHL-level pro, is going to be overall hockey sense and intelligence and really playmaking ability. And so I like that they're throwing him right into the fire on the top line, and I hope part of it is play your game, man. Like, we need goals
yes.
at the top of our lineup. We need offense, like help produce offense. Yeah, you got to win some battles. Yeah, you got to dig some pucks. But we want you to, you know, buzz around, make plays, connect play, make sure that, you know, Besser and Miller are fed in terms of having scoring opportunities to the best of your abilities. That's the version of Archdeep Baines I want to see this club attempt to draw out. And look, it might not be sufficient, right? Like, I know a lot of Canucks fans are down on him because he was so unproductive. The team generated so little with him on the ice in that 8-game look down the stretch. But we've seen it at lower levels. Like, we saw it when he was a top WHL scorer. We've seen it in the AHL. Like, this is a guy who I think has some skills and has a meaningful NHL skill set. This is also a guy who's improved as a skater. Like, his speed looks totally different this year than it did last year, just like his upper body strength and overall core strength look completely different year over year from his first to his second pro year. So when you see a guy who's bright, productive, and has that type of work ethic, like, I don't know. I'm at least open-minded to see what he can do. But I do think this is the spot that he needs to be put in if he's going to make it.
Well, and that point about they need his playmaking, right? I mean, Rick Tocchet spoke about, hey, yeah, we've had a lot of zone time, but we're having trouble converting that into scoring chances. They need guys who are willing and able, right, who have the talent to pull off some good plays, some creative, dangerous offensive plays in the offensive zone, and he certainly should get the chance to do that with JT Miller and Brock Besser. I am interested to see. Now, they're on the road, right? So it's in some ways out of Rick Tocchet's hands, but we're so used to seeing JT Miller and his line playing the tough minutes against the other team's top lines. And I mean, Tampa has what looks like it could be one of the best lines in the league just based on pure talent at the top of their lineup, right? With Jake Guentzel skating with Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov. Now, again, it's not in Rick Tocchet's hands on the road, so maybe John Cooper tries to get those guys away from JT Miller anyways. But with Archdeep Baines going to play with JT Miller, I mean, it's a big task for him. Okay, you got to contribute offensively. You got to make some plays. He might be out there against some really, really dangerous players in the other team's top line as well. So it's a big ask. I think it speaks to how impressed Rick Tocchet was in Archdeep Baines, especially later on in the preseason, and the upside they see in him, that they're willing to put him in this situation. The other thing I want to... Go ahead.
Well, I just want to unpack Shelovs really quickly, because I think there's an analogy. Remember the Canucks flattened the Oilers in game one last season and then went to Casey DeSmith rather than pushing their advantage with Demko. They stuck to their big picture plan. Then they go to Philly, right, and play one of their worst games of the year. And then they lose in Tampa Bay, very much retracing the steps of the season to some extent. And then the club sticks with a pre-scheduled start for Casey DeSmith against the Florida Panthers, despite, you know, sort of the hot start that the club had gotten off to against the Oilers being in doubt that specific night in South Florida. We gave Tocchet a lot of praise for that, focusing on the big picture, right? Resting Demko. In fact, some of the seams where they started overutilizing Demko came much, much later. But there was real discipline and foresight and vision in how the Canucks handled their goalie platoon. I don't know if I'm going to go like that far with this, but despite the fact that Shelov's had a rough outing in game one, sticking with like, okay, 1-1, 1-1, eventually we're going to ride someone, but we're not overreacting to one tough game, especially for our prized young goaltender who we're counting on, right, potentially, to be a guy capable of carrying us in Demko's, you know, uncertain absence and with Demko's uncertain sort of workload when he returns, not to mention just overall future recovering from an unprecedented injury. So I like that they have had the discipline here to not worry about the fact that they haven't won yet, right? Stick with the plan. 1-2, 1-2. I think that's sharp. And I think it's consistent with what we saw from this club when they're managing their goaltenders with this level of discipline. It's the best look on them.
Well, and I think as much as Rick Tocchet is tinkering with the top six and Sprong's coming out of the lineup, you know, we've seen Vincent Desharnais get scratched for a game already. He's making changes, but he's not panicking, right? And I think with the goalies in particular, when it was so clearly set up to be a 50-50 split coming into the season, there's no reason to go away from that plan. Now, that could change, you know, as soon as later this week, right? If Shelov plays poorly again and Lankinen looks really good against Florida, then maybe you have to go back to the drawing board and you have to rethink that. But I do think there's, you know, this is kind of Rick Tocchet acknowledging, yeah, we've lost a couple games. I mean, one of them was in the shootout, for goodness sakes, right? Like, it's literally a coin flip that they lost at the end of that game, or we're having a very different conversation. But just because they lost the first two games, there's no reason all of a sudden dramatically rethink things and how they're managing the situation in their crease. There's some other things I want to talk about with the forward shakeup and especially some of the questions in the top six, but we're a little short on time here, so we'll save that for later on in the show. Playoff update, playoff picture update. You mentioned this a little bit, but I just wanted to know for everyone, four projected playoff contenders. And I mean, like, not just contenders to make the playoffs, but teams people thought could be legitimate Stanley Cup contenders in the Western Conference, a combined zero wins. The Canucks, of course, 0-0-2, Nashville 0-2, Colorado 0-3, Edmonton 0-3. So a lot of projected powers, projected really strong teams in the Western Conference off to a slow start. Meanwhile, Dallas, Vegas, Winnipeg, and Calgary of all teams are all 3-0. So some teams like Dallas, Vegas, that people thought could be good, having really strong starts. But generally, I think it's a good reminder not to overreact to what the standings look like early on in the season.
Yeah, and for example, the Canucks entered this season with 105-point projection per Dom's model over at The Athletic. Dom Lecision, of course, not Dom Shermati, our go-to producer. As a result of being winless in their first week, they're down to 104.
Yeah.
Play the sad trombone music. Their playoff odds have dropped from 95% to 93%. Like, again, we're talking about, you know, shaved almonds here relative to the whole nut.
Betting odds.
The Canucks are underdogs on the road against a Tampa Bay Lightning team that's undefeated in their one game this season. Canucks plus 115 on the money line. Tampa Bay Lightning minus 135. That's a 46 roughly percent implied probability of a Canucks victory tonight. The over-under is set at 6.5 with steam on the under. You know how I feel about steam on the under when it's October. Plus 100 for over 6.5. Had a tough one, a tough beat for me on Friday, by the way. Originally credited with 5 shots on goal.
Oh, they took one away?
Michkov's shots on goal was amended, costing me a plus 800 victory. So I'm up 2.5 units and was oh so close to being up 11.5 after two games, which is tough, but that's how it goes when you chase the spice. Anyway, here's my three picks for today. I'm picking the over, 6.5 at plus 100. I'm just going to keep picking the over, by the way, anytime there's plus money on it in the month of October. Jake DeBrusk, anytime goal scorer, is at plus 275. That's the same odds as like Garland and Hoglander, but this guy plays PP1.
He's on the power play, yeah.
And plays with Elias Pettersson. And so I think it's undervalued. Jake DeBrusk, anytime goal scorer, plus 275. And I'm going Quinn Hughes, plus 270 for 4 shots on goal. Okay, I'm picking Hughes shots milestone at plus 270. Guy's attempting, has 15 shot attempts and 1 shot on goal. Like, not a lot has to break my way for him to go a little bit shot happy in this one. And, of course, the book on Vasilevsky has always tended to be shoot from distance with layered traffic, something the Canucks love to lean into, and I suspect will tonight.
That's the whiteboard for today. Again, they're playing the Tampa Bay Lightning at 4 o'clock in just a matter of hours here. We'll look at the Tampa Bay Lightning with Eric Erlandson next. He covers the team for LightningInsider.com. That's coming up here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.